For Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. It was a scary flight for some Southwest passengers this morning. Shortly after takeoff, they told WREL they heard a loud thump followed by an awful smell that filled the cabin. The Tampa-bound flight was forced to return to RDU when a bird flew into one of its engines. Flight 3249 landed without incident. No injuries to passengers or crew were reported. RDU has recorded 468 incidents of aircraft, both private and passenger planes, hitting animals over the past 15 years. No one has been injured in any of the incidents. Two of the three men who allegedly carjacked a couple at gunpoint in the driveway of their Briar Creek home late last Thursday evening are behind bars. ABC 11 reports the latest to be arrested is only 16 years old. He and a 21-year-old, both from Raleigh, face charges of armed robbery and conspiracy. The third suspect has not been identified. While most of America slept, the U.S. Senate voted, passing a two-year budget. Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland has the details.
The spending bill averts a partial government shutdown in December. Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul opposed the deal, which also raises a debt ceiling.
That means we're going to let President Obama borrow an unlimited amount of money in his last year in office. And I think it's a serious mistake.
The legislation boosts spending on the Pentagon and domestic agencies. The White House has praised the agreement, saying it provides substantial relief from harmful spending cuts while protecting people who rely on Social Security and Medicare. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
Davidson County Sheriff's deputies are investigating the deaths of an elderly couple. The Associated Press reports the couple were found by their son shortly after 6 p.m. Thursday at their home in Thomasville. It's uncertain how long they'd been dead. Police say it appeared they'd been beaten. Their minivan was also missing. No arrests have been made. Wake Med is one of more than 450 hospitals across the nation that has agreed to settle millions of dollars in claims with the federal government over violations of Medicare regulations regarding implanted cardiac defibrillators. That's according to WREL. More than $250 million will be paid back to the government. Wake Med's share is $6.2 million. The State Bureau of Investigation needs your help in locating the man wanted in connection with the murder of a 25-year-old Siler City man. The 21-year-old suspect, also from Siler City, is charged with first-degree murder and robbery with a dangerous weapon. He has now been reported missing. Anyone with information on the case is asked to contact Siler City Police. The Board of Governors met for the first time today under new leadership. Last week, the board named Margaret Spellings as the new system president. Shortly after, Board Chairman John Fennebrook resigned. The interim chairman led the meeting today. Tomorrow is Halloween, but this isn't a trick. It's a treat, and no seance was involved. Elvis Presley died on August 16, 1977, but his legend lives on after a new album has been released. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers explains.
The new album's been highly anticipated and features Elvis with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. It's called If I Can Dream and contains 14 tracks recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London between 1956 and 1973. He even gets a little help on some of them.
Fever.
A virtual duet with jazz pop singer Michael Bublé on Fever, as well as guitarist Dwayne Eddy, who adds his sound to An American Trilogy and Bridge Over Troubled Water. Priscilla Presley is an executive producer of the album and calls the song choices diverse, saying Elvis would have liked that. Other songs include Burnin' Love, In the Ghetto, and of course, the title track. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now it's time to find out what matters with guest host Francis DeLuca.
Please stand by.
We now take you live to the Institute of Rational Thought for a special broadcast. Hard-hitting interviews and relevant information to make your day. It's Chad Adams.
And good afternoon. It's not Chad Adams. It's Francis DeLuca. I'm sitting in for Chad, and I want to give a little note about that. Chad, I think, if he has managed to break free yet, is now checked out of the hospital. He had to go into the hospital. Chad did what, as Lisa said, men do. He was feeling ill, didn't take care of it, and what turned probably was a slight sore throat turned into a serious infection, and he had to go into the hospital last night, and I think they pumped him full of antibiotics over the course of the day, and then they let him out, or they were trying to let him out. So if you're listening, and you can go on the Facebook, or if you want to call us at 747-9421, that's 919-747-9421, and say, tell Chad you hope he feels better. We'll put you on the air, and Chad's probably listening to us right now, I'm sure, to see, you know, because I told him I was going to say something, but he was in the hospital, but I don't think it's, I think they've kind of figured it out and they're taking care of it. So let's all just keep saying prayers for him and make sure that he's okay, and make sure he's, in the future, when he gets sick, he gets it taken care of before it turns into something worse. Of course, the flip side of that is, I hope this microphone I'm talking into isn't infected, because, you know, that would not be fun. I wouldn't want to be that sick.
I sprayed around with Lysol and stuff. I think we're good.
Okay, so Lisa says we're good. But again, 747-9421 if you want to call in. And we've got a good show lined up today, as always. Thanks to Lisa and the work Chad does. But so on today's show, we're going to be talking to Congressman Walter Jones in the next half hour at 3:30. Congressman Walter Jones will be on. And got a lot of stuff to talk to him about, you know, Congress. Nothing going on there that we might be interested in. But, you know, Congressman Jones is a member of the Freedom Caucus. He's also kind of a rebel, too. I mean, he's, you know, it's hard to kind of paint him down any particular stripe. I've known Congressman Jones since the late 80s when he was in the state legislature. And even then, he was a rebel, including he and a few other Democrats. He was a Democrat at the time, as a lot of Republicans in North Carolina were back in the day, were Democrats. He voted with a coalition of a few Democrats and the Republicans to throw out the Speaker of the House, Liston Ramsey, who was the longest serving Speaker of the House at that time. And they voted to form a coalition and replace him with Joe Maverick, a great name for, you know, someone who gets replaced as a maverick. So I've known Congressman Jones since back in those days, and you know, we've kind of stayed in touch over the years. And he'll be on at 3:30, and then the regular guest at 4 o'clock is Tim Boyum from Time Warner Cable News. News 14, depending on what you want to do. It's a, you know, he's on statewide, and he has a show. He is the political news director for TWC News, and he has a show on every night, Capitol Tonight, which covers kind of state politics. It's an interesting show for us political junkies, and it's also a good show for people who want to just catch up on what's going on. So I think I've taken care of all the admin things. Again, if you want to call 747-9421 and say hi to Chad, I'll hope he's listening. And I don't know, Lisa, have you guys talked about the new ways to listen? I know you've talked about Google Play. You're on Google now. Have you mentioned that you're on Apple all over the air?
Yeah, we have.
Okay. So you can listen to us online at freedomactionnetwork.com. Mm-hmm. You can go to the Google Play and download the app, or you can go to iTunes and download the Apple app, which mm-hmm. I've done on my, I have Apple, I've downloaded it on my phone, so.
You can even wake up to Francis on Monday if you want to.
That's right. You can, because of that, you can listen to me around the clock until someone does the show on Monday afternoon, which I think will be me, so unless Chad makes a miraculous recovery and comes back to reclaim his microphone.
And if you're listening, Chad, stay home and rest your voice so you can come back next week or whenever the doctor says you can.
Yeah, Chad needs to stay home and get better. And I've been texting him today. I haven't talked to him, but, you know, it's kind of ironic. You know, he loves to talk, and what's wrong? He can't talk. How that's kind of some people's definition of hell would be the thing you love to do, you can't do.
That's so true.
And Chad loves to talk, and you know, his throat does not allow him to do it. And he was having a bit of a trouble last week, that's how long he's been having this. Is it's been going on for a long time because he kept complaining about having a sore throat, but did not do anything about it. All right. I'm going to kind of cover a couple things that have been in the news. One in particular that happened last night here in Wake County. So I want to talk about that. There was a protest. The governor signed a bill, House Bill 318, which was a bill, it was the North Carolina Worker Freedom Act, I believe was the
Worker official. Protection Act?
Worker Protection Act, I'm sorry, North Carolina Worker Protection Act. And the bill was in the news and everything, what they like to refer to it as the Sanctuary Cities Bill. That was one part of it, but it had a lot of other things about that concerned identification, also concerned what companies had to do to make sure they were hiring legal workers and not illegal workers, and all that. So, but let me read the story that appeared in the News and Observer this morning. So, putting on my glasses. So, six protesters who blocked the street in front of the executive mansion over the signing of House Bill 318, a law that bans sanctuary cities and forms of immigrant identification. Now, what they should, they block are forms of illegal immigrant identification because legal immigrants have identification. That's called a U.S. government green card. It's called a visa. It's called a passport. Illegal immigrants have no identification. So what they were doing is saying that you can't use something that is not a government-issued ID as ID with government. They were arrested Thursday night. Governor Pat McCrory, who was not at the mansion, signed the legislation on Wednesday, turning back pleas from advocates who wanted to veto it. Okay, they said about 150 people protested, but the truth was I saw the beginning of this because it was conveniently carried on live by the news station. I'll get to that in a minute. But they arrested the people were protesting. They arrested six protesters because they chained themselves in the middle of the street starting at about 5 o'clock. They chained themselves in Blunt Street right in front of the mansion, and they chained themselves together in a, such a way that literally it took them a couple hours to cut through everything and unchain them without hurting the protesters. And they did that.
Yeah, and they had on tubes on their arms. I mean, that's how intrinsic this was.
Yeah, this is how much they had these wooden support things between them to hold the tubes. They had the tubes. And the reason they put those tubes there, do you know why?
No.
So they had their wrists chained together through the tubes. That way, you couldn't just cut the chains. You had to cut the tubes off. And so because there were people's arms under there, it took you a while to get those off to even cut the chains under there. And it was a very intricate thing. And you could tell a lot of planning went into this. The protest was organized by several groups, including United We Dream, the Southeast Immigrant Rights Network. Notice they say immigrants, even though you know, none of this targeted immigrants. It targeted illegal aliens. Tim Eakins of the United We Dream called North Carolina the front line of the immigration battles. So it goes on to talk about that. Now, a couple observations about this, and I actually had, but I walked out of the office and left them in my office. So at the 15-minute break I may run in there and talk about this a little. So we had these people protesting, and the organizers are very aware because back, if anybody who listens to this has probably heard us refer to the Blueprint North Carolina. And back in 2013, a document by Blueprint was made public. And in it, they talked about organizing protests and stuff. And one of the things they said in that was that you need to organize these very public displays and that will allow our contacts in the media to cover them. So this protest was planned at 5 o'clock in front of the governor's mansion. By the way, the governor signed the bill in Greensboro, North Carolina. So these protesters knew the governor wasn't there. They knew he was in, but they came there because they knew it would get more coverage there than it would in Greensboro, even though the governor was in Greensboro. Well, conveniently, WRAL, WTVD, this covered it live on their news show and continuously all the way through their 6 o'clock local news. They put up in the air two helicopters that were providing kind of round-the-clock coverage of this protest. And remember, it had a half dozen people chained together in the street. And at first, just a few protesters on the side. Now, as time went on, people saw it and came down to watch it. So the crowd swelled thanks to the news media. And a whole lot more people saw this than ever would have seen it or heard about it if it was just written up in the paper. And it was live and it was continued to be hype and, you know, a lot of drama and talking about it. Now, these people interrupted the street that, you know, so this was at rush hour as people were leaving work. That street got shut down for almost 3 hours. They chained themselves in front of a place where the governor wasn't. And they were protesting a legally passed bill that did not impact a single legal person in the United States. The only people it will affect, if it affects them even, are illegal people illegally in the United States. And, you know, one of the things, these people are arrested, taken down, and one of them voluntarily identified that they were in the United States illegally. They said they were an illegal immigrant, you know, or illegal alien, as we used to refer to them, because the legal term is when you're in the United States and you are not a resident or legal. You are an alien. You're either a legal alien or you're an illegal alien. That was, it's a term of law. It's what we call them for immigration status. Mm-hmm. So when people go, oh, that's demeaning and inhuman, it wasn't until it was. And so, you know, I still think that's a good term for illegal alien, because that's what the law used to call them, a legal alien or an illegal alien. But this woman was, you know, she identified herself as illegal. So she broke the law once to come here. Now she has broken the law again to protest in streets that are maintained for commerce and for traffic. You know, and
blocking a main street in downtown Raleigh in front of the governor's mansion. That's atrocious.
And I have no problem. People go, well, you know, this is civil disobedience and this is, you know, civil disobedience is about people who are covered by the laws, you know, protesting the law. And, you know, this has nothing to do with that. Again, this law does not negatively impact anybody who is a legal resident, because one of the things it said was, in order to use an ID card with local government, it had to be a legal government issued ID card. It could not be a made up thing by a nonprofit group like Civitas, or from the Mexican consulate will give you one of their consular cards with no ID or anything. And yeah, it tells you a name and the thing, but the police and the government officials have no way of knowing if that is, in fact, who your real, what your real identity is, and what. So, well, we're going to take a quick break here as soon as Lisa cues it up, because I want to go get some papers. I'm going to continue this on the other side of the break and tell you a little about the people.
Are you afraid that your child may be trapped in a failing school or in one that does not fit his or her educational needs? Are you concerned that these conditions will ultimately limit your child's opportunities and the quality of life they will enjoy? If you answered yes to any of these questions, know you're not alone. And there is something you can do. A new program called Education Savings Accounts, or ESAs for short, is giving hope to children and peace of mind to parents. To learn more about ESAs, join us for a town hall meeting on Tuesday, November 8th, at 7 p.m. at First Baptist Church in Uptown Charlotte. Professor Bart Danielson of North Carolina State University will discuss how school choice can renew communities, and Jonathan Butcher will share his experiences in Arizona, the first state to pass ESA legislation. We promise an informative discussion that may just change you and your child's life. There is no cost to attend, but registration is required. Register by going to nccivitas.org, search upcoming events, and click Town Hall Charlotte. We hope to see you there.
Siri, create a reminder.
Okay, just tell me what you want to be reminded about.
Civitas Conservative Leadership Conference, March 4th and 5th.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Civitas's Conservative Leadership Conference is just around the corner, and planning is already in full swing. Are you ready? Set a reminder for Friday, March 4th and Saturday, March 5th, just weeks before North Carolina's primary, for the 2016 Civitas Conservative Leadership Conference at Raleigh's Crabtree Marriott Hotel. You can sign up right now by going to our website, civitasclc.com. That's civitasclc.com. There are even some early bird specials available, but they won't last long. So mark your calendar, or better yet, go to civitasclc.com and make your reservations now. That's civitasclc.com to register. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to What Matters with Chad Adams, and guest hosting today is Francis DeLuca. I'm the president of Civitas Institute, and I'm not going to talk too much about Civitas right now, but I want to continue what I was talking about in the last segment, where I was talking about the protest by about the law to protect North Carolina workers signed by the governor yesterday, which was being protested by a group, a number of groups, and organized by really what you would have to say are out-of-state groups were organizing it. These aren't people who are actually in the state. Now, the protesters were not all North Carolina people, it seems like, because I'm going to tell you, we did a little research on the people who got arrested. And interesting. So let's start. The first one, you know, one of them identified herself as an illegal, and that was Let's see. Let me find it. I have all these things right in front of me, and then, of course, I don't have them organized. But Mariana identified herself as an illegal immigrant. She has a daughter here who is probably a legal resident of the U.S., so that's a good thing. But one of them who gave their address, Ivana Cristina Gonzalez. In her arrest record, she gave her address as Miami, Florida. And that's a north, I won't say the address on the radio, but she put on the arrest that she was a resident of Florida. Well, we looked her up. She also happens to be a registered voter in North Carolina.
How does that work?
She's a resident in Durham, and she's been voting here since 2012. She was in Orange County, and then she apparently moved to Durham County. But yet, on the name and address of defendant, she put down Miami. So does she, in fact, live in Miami, or does she, in fact, live in North Carolina? Because if she lives in Miami, which her arrest record would tend to indicate is where she lives right now, she's saying that she's lives in North Carolina for voting purposes. But I'll leave that up to the listeners to kind of decide what's going on there. The rest of the people, when we checked, there's a couple people who are registered, and, they very well may be citizens, and there's a couple people who aren't registered. So, the one that caught our attention and what made us check was the fact that one of them said that, she was not a citizen. So we decided to check to see if she was, in fact, registered to vote. And like I said, a number of them are registered to vote. One of the things we've been talking about and some other states have done is that they have actually required proof of citizenship to register to vote. And we think that's something North Carolina should definitely look at doing. We had required a voter ID, photo ID, and then unfortunately the legislature weakened that requirement. But, we could add a requirement that you prove you're a citizen. Other states have successfully done that, and the courts are pretty good with that because that's one of the basic things to voting in the U.S. is that you be an actual citizen of the country and of the state in which you vote. The woman who said she was not a citizen was Maria Rodriguez. And again, she's not registered to vote. But we researched that, and several of them appear to be legal citizens of the state. Mm-hmm. One we know for a fact. Now, what was not talked about was their immigration status, except the only reason is R-E-L, W-R-E-L on the story, because she volunteered that she was not legal.
Right.
And, of course, I got to say, for me, it is stunning that someone who is in the country illegally would then go out and purposefully get arrested. It kind of tells you the contempt that the laws are held by the people who are here. And once you break one law, your kind of threshold for other laws is lowered.
Mm-hmm. It also tells you that Raleigh's a sanctuary city, doesn't it?
Well, and that's what the other thing this bill did. It no longer allows North Carolina cities to say they're sanctuary cities. In other words, they have to comply with the law. And we were talking about this a lot today among people, and people were calling me, is that the sanctuary city thing is saying that we are not going to cooperate with the federal government in enforcing immigration status. And everybody's probably familiar with the case in San Francisco of the illegal who killed somebody after getting out of jail because they didn't, he had been deported like four or five times, mm-hmm. and they did not contact INS and say, hey, we got this guy. Do you want us to hold him? Instead, they let him out and he killed a woman.
Yeah, Kate's Law.
Yeah, he killed a woman right out in public. Yeah. I mean, this wasn't like some, and so, when things like that happen, it calls attention to the fact that some of these people are in here. And, unlike Donald Trump, I'm not going to say they're all murderers and rapists and thugs, but anyone who's here illegally has already broken the law. And that may have been either they came across the border illegally, they got into the country legally and then overstayed their visa, or, some other thing, or they violated their terms of being here and have been revoked and sent away and then came back. I mean, In a lot of times, everybody equates illegal aliens with being of Hispanic descent. But in the U.S., there are illegal aliens who are Hispanic. There's Middle Easterners. There's Asians. There are people from Europe who are here illegally. We do not have control of our borders, period. Doesn't matter how they get here. We do not have control of our borders. It's just because of our proximity to the Central American in Mexico, a whole lot of them are here and they come across. And since their names are Hispanic, all the Hispanics here are suspect. Even the longtime legal Hispanics, which I've known, I grew up in the military, and there were a lot of Hispanics who were in the military, who were legal, who were citizens. You know, their parents were citizens, but they, like all immigrants, tended to go to the military as a way of advancing. So, you know, but for them, they're, you know, this kind of thing causes problems with them because they people look at them and just assume that because you have a Hispanic last name, that you are somehow illegal.
Well, and Francis, they took the time to, it takes like 8 years. It's almost an 8-year process to become a legal citizen. And it's really not fair for somebody else to just automatically, you know, be made a legal citizen like happened in the 80s with Reagan. That was one of the mistakes, unfortunately, that President Reagan made.
And that's the other, in the 80s when he did that, that was supposed to
with
solve.
Amnesty, right.
Because the other part of that was that we would fix our border.
Correct.
And guess what we never did?
Didn't fix our border.
Nope. And people assume that this is kind of a recent phenomenon. And people need to go back, and I'm going to get in trouble for this. They need to go look up something called Operation Wetback. Have you ever heard of Operation
Wetback? No, I haven't.
No, I got something Lisa didn't know. And you need to go look up Operation Wetback. Dwight Eisenhower, in the 50s, we had an overabundance of labor from Mexico mostly. And people were complaining because there was so much. Well, they came up with a plan, and they literally rounded people up and put them on boats and sent them back to Mexico.
Wow.
He put a general that he knew in charge of it. Mm-hmm. And so when people, you know, it would, and I've never looked at the numbers in terms of the number of illegals here in the 50s compared to now, but I would be willing to bet you would probably be looking at doing hundreds of thousands or millions in relation to what they did back then, because I believe they like sent 50,000 people out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was how many they kicked out of the country. And you know, I'd have to go back and reread what the whole impetus was, but there was a fear that we had too many illegals in the country and that they were driving down wages and that they were causing problems, putting stress on the states and the social services and everything. So Eisenhower approached it like a military operation. They gave it a name and, you know, they proceeded to like literally put people on boats and send them out of the country. So I'm going to kind of stop there on that. But this whole story with people protesting and everything, and it's contrived. It's about getting the media story. They know how to do it. And they get a hearing because they have friends in the media who will cover this in a way that other kind of stories won't. Now, I want to talk about, switch from that to industrial hemp. There's a bill still waiting for the governor's signature. He's got a number of bills. He signed today a bunch of bills and put out a release. So a lot of the bills that have been waiting his signature, he signed today. There's one bill, industrial hemp, and we have written about it. It was a Senate bill that originally started as a license plate bill, started to give license plates to registered deeds. On the 28th of September, it emerged from committee as not a license plate bill, as an industrial hemp bill. And it passed the House that day and passed the Senate the next day. So literally within 36 hours of coming out, now the lobbyists say they talked all the reason it passed so quickly was they had done all the legwork and everything. And, you know, they didn't bring in an earlier because they didn't want to get stuck in committee. You know, they didn't want to have to go through the actual legislative process and have people commenting on it and, you know, give other people a chance to weigh in. They wanted it kind of done in a secret way. And so that bill is still waiting for the governor to sign. But the News and Observer did an article, and this is where I kind of beat up on the media a little. The industrial hemp bill, they talked about it. They talked about conservative groups wrote about it. Well, they never mentioned that conservative group, and it was Civitas. And then it kind of irritates me that Colin Campbell, who's a pretty good reporter, would write about it and not contact us and not talk to us. He did contact the Christian Action League and talk to Reverend Creech. But, you know, as far as I know, they didn't actually write on it. We did. And so just call out the NNO for not asking us about it. So, and I think we're ready to go to break. And we have Congressman Jones will be with us after the break. So. ¶¶
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. It was a scary flight for some Southwest passengers this morning. Shortly after takeoff, they told WREL they heard a loud thump followed by an awful smell that filled the cabin. The Tampa-bound flight was forced to return to RDU when a bird flew into one of its engines. Flight 3249 landed without incident. No injuries to passengers or crew were reported. RDU has recorded 468 incidents of aircraft, both private and passenger planes, hitting animals over the past 15 years. No one has been injured in any of the incidents. Two of the three men who allegedly carjacked a couple at gunpoint in the driveway of their Briar Creek home late last Thursday evening are behind bars. ABC 11 reports the latest to be arrested is only 16 years old. He and a 21-year-old, both from Raleigh, face charges of armed robbery and conspiracy. The third suspect has not been identified. While most of America slept, the U.S. Senate voted, passing a two-year budget. Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland has the details.
The spending bill averts a partial government shutdown in December. Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul opposed the deal, which also raises the debt ceiling.
That means we're going to let President Obama borrow an unlimited amount of money in his last year in office, and I think it's a serious mistake.
The legislation boosts spending on the Pentagon and domestic agencies. The White House has praised the agreement, saying it provides substantial relief from harmful spending cuts while protecting people who rely on Social Security and Medicare. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
Davidson County Sheriff's deputies are investigating the deaths of an elderly couple. The Associated Press reports the couple were found by their son shortly after 6 p.m. Thursday at their home in Thomasville. It's uncertain how long they'd been dead. Police say it appeared they'd been beaten. Their minivan was also missing. No arrests have been made. Wake Med is one of more than 450 hospitals across the nation that has agreed to settle millions of dollars in claims with the federal government over violations of Medicare regulations regarding implanted cardiac defibrillators. That's according to WREL. More than $250 million will be paid back to the government. Wake Med's share is $6.2 million. The State Bureau of Investigation needs your help in locating the man wanted in connection with the murder of a 25-year-old Siler City man. The 21-year-old suspect, also from Siler City, is charged with first-degree murder and robbery with a dangerous weapon. He has now been reported missing. Anyone with information on the case is asked to contact Siler City Police. The Board of Governors met for the first time today under new leadership. Last week, the board named Margaret Spellings as the new system president. Shortly after, Board Chairman John Fennebresque resigned. The interim chairman led the meeting today. Tomorrow is Halloween, but this isn't a trick. It's a treat, and no seance was involved. Elvis Presley died on August 16, 1977, but his legend lives on after a new album has been released. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers explains.
The new album's been highly anticipated and features Elvis with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. It's called If I Can Dream and contains 14 tracks recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London between 1956 and 1973. He even gets a little help on some of them.
Fever.
A virtual duet with jazz pop singer Michael Bublé on Fever, as well as guitarist Duane Eddy, who adds his sound to An American Trilogy and Bridge Over Troubled Water. Priscilla Presley is an executive producer of the album and calls the song choices diverse, saying Elvis would have liked that. Other songs include Burnin' Love, In the Ghetto, and of course, the title track. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of What Matters with guest host Francis DeLuca.
And this is Francis DeLuca sitting in for Chad on What Matters with Chad Adams. And thank you everybody for tuning in. And again, you know, Chad is kind of laid up. Hopefully he's out of the hospital by now, but he's been working on getting out of the hospital. Last time I checked, he was still there. The picture showed he was still there, but he should be out by now. He was complaining about they released him and then it took forever. So, but let's move on because we've got a great guest this half hour. On the line is Congressman Walter Jones. Hello, Congressman.
Francis, hello, and I wish the very best to Chad and look forward to
talking with you today. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I was surprised, one, that I was guest hosting, and two, that you were on there. I said, that's a good day.
Well, we've been friends for a long time, and we share the same conservative views on so many things.
And I was, at the start of the show, I was describing you to some people. I said, you know, that you are true to your principles, and you're also a maverick. You don't necessarily go along. And I said, I've known you since the late 80s, and even back then, you were involved in some things with a speaker back then.
Well, we did put together a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, and I was a Democrat at the time, to unseat Liston Ramsey as Speaker of the House.
That's right. So, which kind of a good segue, because there's nothing that's been going on up in Washington and Congress lately.
You're right. Well, I tell you, Francis, you know, I had joined Mark Meadows, who put in the resolution to vacate the chair. Also, not only myself, but Thomas Massey from Kentucky and Ted Yoho from Florida, and then Louie Goma joined us as well. It was nothing personal against John Boehner, but he had taken too much of the authority that should have been in the hands of the committee. But we can go into that later if you want to.
All right. Well, why don't we start off there? And we've got a couple things we want to talk about. So what I wanted you to do is you drive the conversation. But
sure.
Let's talk about. Let's finish up with the speaker and you know, how we got to where we are, and then we can go into some defense issues. But so you voted against Paul Ryan for House Speaker this time.
I did. Probably back in August, a small group of us met with Dan Webster from Florida. Dan is the former Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives and a good Christian man and a good man of principle. And let me make a point on that right now. Dan Webster has said numerous times in my company on the floor of the House and actually in meetings that the word principle and power do not coincide, because too many times that people of principle are looking to do what's right for the people. People of power are looking how to get more money into their coffers and pass certain legislation that benefits the rich and not take care of the average person. And that's why I supported Dan Webster and regret so much that the conservatives in Washington did not join us in supporting Dan Webster. Paul Ryan is a great guy. He's smart. I think the world of him from the standpoint of his intellectual abilities. But there again, I was looking for someone that would guarantee principle and not be so concerned about raising money in a position like being Speaker of the House. So those things played into it.
Well, those are all principled reasons. I know that Dan Webster had been the first to approach, you know, kind of got the Freedom Caucus behind him initially.
Well, see, this is what concerned me, and I'm not going to call too many names, but some of those in the Freedom Caucus, I'm in the Liberty Caucus that was started years ago by
Ron sorry.
Paul.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you're right.
And Justin Amash is head, but some of those in the Liberty Caucus are also in the Freedom Caucus, and such as David Bratt being one, Ted Yoho being one, and there are a few others, Bill Posey from Florida. They were in the Freedom Caucus. But they're the three names I just gave to you and your listeners. They also voted for Dan Webster, too, on the House floor on Thursday.
Well, that's good. Like I said, it's good to get your take so that people can understand exactly what's going on. I got to say, this is kind of a side and has nothing to do with philosophy or anything, but he must have one of the best names in politics, Dan Webster. What a historic name to have.
Well, I was going to say, it's definitely a historic name, and He's a family man, and he's a man of strong Christian values and principle. And, you know, that is, to me, what is missing in Washington, D.C. Francis, is all about money and raising money. I'm talking about both parties now. And the influence of money is greater today than it was when I went there 20 years ago.
And what a lot of our listeners probably don't understand is when you talk about money, it's, you know, kind of people know how the sums are spent, but they don't understand how gavels are passed out and what it means when you get appointed to certain committees or anything. I don't know if you want to, but do you want to give a quick explanation of how that works?
Oh, yeah. There's a book called Extortion, It's written by Peter Swigert, and I tell you the truth, if I could buy it for everyone in my district, I would, because it is very critical of both parties. It's not one party or the other. And Peter Swigert, the book is named Extortion. It's in detail of how members of Congress and particularly chairmen use their positions to encourage people who have money and people have an interest in certain legislation, how they're encouraged to participate in fundraising. And you participate in fundraising, then you might get your bill heard or to the floor of the House. And too much of that goes on. And to me, that's one reason that Donald Trump and Ben Carson are doing so well, and on the left side of it, why Bernie Sanders is doing well with that, with his people, because people just see, and they don't have any confidence in the integrity of Washington. It's never been perfect, and I'm not trying to imply that it has. Money has always been part of Washington, but it's just in the last few years, it's just gotten more and more overwhelming in the influence of money and policy. It should be the policy is generated by the interests of the people, not by those who have money and can buy candidates.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, when I heard that explanation that you just gave the first time, and, you know, it's kind of something that people involved in politics have a sense of, but to hear it laid out like that, and I have not read that, but I'm going to probably get the book Extortion and recommend to people they do.
Please read it. I'd buy it for you if I could. You can get it from it online, or you can get it from Barnes & Noble, any of the bookstores in Raleigh, I'm sure.
All right. Well, let's. I want to give you a chance to talk to on some of the other issues that you care about. So, you briefly mentioned how you voted against the defense bill, the initial. And why don't you talk about that? Because that plays into an issue.
Sure.
You've always cared about military personnel and
Absolutely.
Veterans, especially. So, talk about that.
Well, Francis, I still go to Walter Reed. Of course, now it's moved from D.C. to Maryland, but I still go visit the wounded and see the young men, Army, Marines, whatever service, with legs, you know, amputated and other injuries. And I always want America to Congress to follow the Constitution. If we're going to send our young men and women to war and to die, we need to have debates on the floor of the House. We don't do that anymore. And one reason I voted in opposition to the NDAA bill, one thing, it was 1,915 pages. I mean, take you, somebody like me, it would take me 3 weeks to read the bill. But we get the bill in 2 or 3 days after it becomes a conference report. And I'm just sick and tired of spending money in Afghanistan. We've already spent over $660 billion in Afghanistan. The president has signed an agreement with Ghani, I think his name is pronounced, in Afghanistan to stay there for 9 more years, and we're going to be spending an average of $25 to $30 billion a year for 9 more years. Where are we going to get the money from? Where are we going to get the money from? We are a nation that's broke. We actually, I did not vote for this debt ceiling increase that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the president agreed on. It's going to raise the debt about $1.2 trillion in the next 2 years. They say they can pay for it in the next 25 years. Friends, it'll never be paid for. It's just going to continue to build on the debt. And then when we get to about $21, $22, $23 trillion in debt, then we're going to collapse. I mean, it's right around the corner. So why are we spending all this money in Afghanistan? And if you want him on your show sometime, if you let me know when we finish, John Sopko, the Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, I would love for him to be on this show that you and Chad have.
Well, I see Lisa furiously writing down in the other room. She's actually, we will have him on.
Please do, because he is the Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction, and he'll tell you about the absolute waste. And let me share with you, if we got time, the former Commandant of the Marine Corps, you being a Marine, will know this name, Chuck Kulak. He has been my advisor on Afghanistan he's retired now, for about 5 years, and he just constantly thinks it's an absolute waste of money and blood. Let me just read this very quickly.
Please do.
He said, I have shared with Congressman Jones many times the fact that it takes years to train a sergeant or a captain or a major or a rifleman in the Marine Corps, and our troops can read and write and have a loyalty to their nation. we actually built a strategy around training the Afghan army, who are 95% illiterate, who have no loyalty to their nation, and who have no desire to die for its leadership. And we thought this strategy would work. And he used the word insanity. This is from the former commandant of the Marine Corps. And again, he's been my advisor for about 5 years. He sends me emails. When I email him, we've had some phone calls. And we keep spending billions of dollars of that, and we're not getting anything for it. And we have the same needs right there in Raleigh and surrounding counties, just like we do down here in eastern North Carolina.
Well, I mean, you know, having been in the military for so long, always one of the things when we go over there and think we can instill what we do in other cultures that don't have the same values and history as we do, and that's a case where we think, okay, it's just training.
Well, Francis, also in that bill, one reason I didn't vote for it, they've got millions of dollars to go to pay the Afghan army and the leadership of the Afghan army. And we know the stories that have come out about the leaders of the Afghan army having sex with little boys.
And this is,
I don't think the taxpayers want their money to go pay for a crime like, you know, a pedophile. And that's what we're doing.
And Congressman, you understand that. You are very familiar with this, but most average people do not understand the cultural aspects of what we're, what you're dealing with. And that's what, you know, and I agree with you, we shouldn't be paying people. And and that leads to one of the men who got in trouble for, you know, trying to stop that.
Major Bresler?
Yes.
Yeah. We've been working with other members of Congress on that. This is a man that was trying to inform and protect his fellow colleagues. And it just, there's so many examples, Francis, of situations like Major Bresler. It's just, we need to have a strong military, which I support 100%, but we need to have some foreign policies that make sense. That's why I'm a big supporter of Ron Paul, but also his son Rand Paul, because we need to stop trying to police the world and start policing our own borders right here in America.
Well, that's so speaking of our borders, I start off the show by talking about, you know, North Carolina. The governor just signed a protecting North Carolina workers law, which had dealt with illegal immigration. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I got home and saw where they were protesting the night before you and I are doing this show, and I'm just real pleased and proud that the governor would take that stand. I think it's important, and I think it's time, and that's one reason, again, why Donald Trump's doing so well. I think it's time that we start trying to fix America before it's too late. And it could be too late soon if we don't do it now. So I think the governor did the right thing, and I commend him for it.
Well, okay, so you've stepped into it. So I got to ask your kind of impressions on where we are, where the Republicans are, I should say, in the presidential race. You know, and you mentioned Donald Trump, and you mentioned that you're supporting Rand Paul. What are your observations, just kind of as someone who knows kind of politics from the inside looking out?
Well, I committed early to Rand Paul, and I'm going to be with Rand Paul till he releases his supporters, which I have, obviously is one of them. But I know that the frustration, I've seen it in my district, the 3rd District of North Carolina, has been deep for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think that when you get a candidate that can self-fund, you know, not everybody can do that, let's be fair about it, but that I think that people are looking for hope, and it could be any of the candidates, but in this case, I'm just taking the two that are running at the top, Ben Carson and Donald Trump, and people are just tired of the influence of money in Washington, and they are tired of a Congress that doesn't listen to the people, and I think most of us that I know are trying to listen to the people, but when you look at it as on a national scale, many people don't think that Congress hears them.
So,
I mean, I got 100 phone calls, Francis, in 2 days from the 3rd District of North Carolina not to vote for Paul Ryan, excuse me.
Well, you talked about that, and you briefly kind of ran by it and talked about the budget deal. You know, I got to tell you, I really kind of amazed. I know the only reason it passed was the Democrats voted for it almost 100%, and a minority of Republicans went along with it. But it just, you talk about frustration, and I think that bill is an example of why people get frustrated with the Republicans in charge of Congress.
Francis, you're exactly right. I mean, Boehner just bypassed Congress and cut the deal with the president and with Mitch McConnell. Let me give you one quick example for your listeners. In the year 2000, Bill Clinton leaves office. We are $5.6 trillion in debt as a nation. Today, it's over $18.2 trillion, and the bill that McConnell and Boehner and Mr. Obama signed together, that in itself is going to add another $1.2 trillion to the debt of the nation. People are just tired and fed up with a Congress that does not listen to the people back home.
Well, I think in you mentioned it earlier, the frustration and the expression of that in the polling you're seeing for the presidential race.
Well, you know, again, we've got a ways to go. I think Iowa's in January. Of course, we moved our primary to March, and so that'll come pretty soon as well. But all in all, I think that the American people are not looking to the establishment. I am glad to say that the establishment is working against me because I'm independent. I do what I think's right. I think I'm a good conservative who believes in the Christian values of America, the Judeo-Christian values of America and the Constitution.
Well, I think you have like one of the highest ratings from Heritage Action. I believe you may be near the top of the in terms of North Carolina legislator or congressional representatives. So that's and Heritage Action is pretty conservative.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just like on this reconciliation bill that we had recently, reconciliation. They put to defund Planned Parenthood for 1 year to take some aspects of Obamacare out, and I was one of few Republicans. I didn't vote for it because it was just a shell game. The leadership, that's one reason we wanted Boehner out of office. He just keeps playing these games to try to fool the people back home. And you can't fool the people back home. They understand the game that's being played, and they're tired of it. You've already stated that. They're tired of it. And so if we as a Republican Party don't start going back to the values and the principles that made this party great, then I don't know what the future is, quite frankly.
Well, so what do you see now that Boehner is out, Ryan's in? Do you have hope for any change?
Well, I want to give Paul Ryan the benefit of the doubt. I want to give him a chance to prove himself. He says he wants to change the system we have and go back to regular order, which is something Boehner took away from the Congress. And my hope is, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, even though I didn't vote for him, I want to hope and believe that he can be his own man and not, as Boehner was so influenced by K Street, that it was unbelievable. I mean, I'm going to try to tell this story. I don't know the length of time, but we had a bill back in June, I believe, that would allow the mobile home companies who are writing contracts for clients, customers who are buying mobile homes in the contract to raise it from 8 to 11%. And I was the only Republican to vote no on it when they came over to whip me and said, why are you voting no? Well, my great staff, Glenn Downs at the time, they had done some research, and we found out that, first of all, that Warren Buffett, if you look up his financial portfolio, you're going to find out that among his multitude of holdings, one of them is that he owns 91% of the mobile home industry. So here we are with 45,000 mobile homes in the 3rd District of North Carolina, the district I have the privilege to represent. I want to start raising the interest rate on people buying mobile homes from 8 to 11% so Warren Buffett can get another bottle of champagne. I don't think so. They're the things that influence Washington, and that's why people are frustrated. Francis, I just gave you one example with that mobile home bill. Why in the world would members of Congress, my own party, who've got the same situation I have with people in your district that live in mobile homes, that's the best they can do. Why would you allow them to raise the interest rates on them?
Well, having grown up in Eastern North Carolina, I know what you're talking about. I mean, that is a you know, a lot of people, that's all they can afford.
That's right. Francis, that's exactly right. And I told my SWIP, I said, I don't know if Jesus Christ was a Republican or Democrat, but I know one thing he said about people who need help, don't forget them. That's my paraphrase, by the way.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, I should say, I actually lived in a mobile home when I was younger. I mean, my family for a while, we lived in a mobile home.
And there's nothing wrong with that, Francis, but your point is my point. Why in the world, when people are doing the best they can, and that's the best investment they can make, why at this particular time? And this country is not strong now. It's really not. What county is, but we're in Pitt County, but not all the counties in our state. Why raise the interest rate on people who are doing the best they can?
Especially in today. I mean, my God, what did you say it was, 8% right now? I mean, that's almost total return, because the money that Warren Buffett is using is basically they're giving it to him to lend out.
Well, it was to allow the contract in the contract to go from 8% to 11%. Now, it has not passed the Senate, but that was the House bill that we had in May, June of this year.
It's funny you mentioned Warren Buffett, because you know Warren Buffett's one of the big opponents to ending the inheritance tax. I'm not asking for position on that, but it's interesting because one of the ways he became so wealthy was buying businesses that were sold because of the inheritance tax. And so, when you find things like that out, like what you talked about, it's not so surprising that their policy positions match what is helping their business.
Great. I'm glad you shared that. I understand. Well, you know, to me, my dear friend, my retired chief of staff now, Glenn Downs, your friend, my friend, always said about my voting, people say, well, how would you classify Walter Jones' voting record? He said, well, when he goes to vote on a bill, I don't know if he's going to vote as a conservative or a populist or a libertarian. He said, that's the way I would describe Walter Jones' voting habits.
Which all have their points depending on what you're voting on.
That's true. That's exactly right. But when it's all said and done, it's the people's government, and that's why I feel so strongly about the people influencing policy instead of those who can buy the policy.
Well, it's unfortunately, you just talked about that. You said the three different ways you're going to approach voting. And
that was Glenn's evaluation.
Okay. Well, Glenn's evaluation. But one of the things that has happened is, if you describe yourself as conservative or you are a Republican, is that people assume that you are in the, it's big business. And unfortunately, a lot of Republicans have kind of become that way. They think that whatever big business wants is what we should give them. And that's not necessarily the best thing to do. And I think that's what Glenn said about you, depending on what he didn't know right. If you were going to vote one of those three ways. Well, that's why that's important, because everything Republicans and conservatives, if you use that interchangeably, throw up there is not necessarily good policy.
No. Well, for me, I believe that I joined this Republican Party. It's like being a convert to Catholicism. I was not born in the church. I was not born into the Republican Party. But I still believe that the Republican Party, when it's true to its core values and principle, is the best hope for America. But when it deviates from that core principle, it's got a problem. And that's what I saw in John Boehner and the reason I didn't support him.
Well, you know, it's probably unfortunate. You and I remember when you switched and you ran, you were first elected to Congress, not your first race, but when 1994, and, you know, Republicans came in with a lot of, kind of a lot of energy, a lot of good ideals, and really started doing things. I think one of the worst things has been the fact that they've been in power. And that seems to have corrupted a lot of things.
Well, Francis, I'm very pro-life, and I believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman. And that's what the Bible says, so therefore I believe it. And there was a time when you said, when I joined the party back in 94, the party was a strong advocate of the unborn. The party was a strong advocate of the teachings of God in the Bible. And I think we've somewhat gotten weak on that, and that bothers me. It really does. That's why I try to speak out about it and not be ashamed of how I feel.
Well, and I think you're talking earlier about money. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of the big money backers do not want those issues talked about.
You're right.
And that's one of the problems. People seem to think that the Republicans can live as just a fiscal conservative party and that they can ignore the other things. And they don't understand if they do that, that's going to relegate Republicans to minority.
Francis, thank you for saying it so well, and you did, truthfully. That is why I think, I mean, I'm in Eastern North Carolina. I go to a lot of the churches. I'm Catholic, but they invite me to come give my testimony to the Protestant churches, and particularly the smaller churches. And I know what I'm saying. I know how they feel. I was one in Little Washington, a little Presbyterian church, about 70 people there a couple of Sundays ago, and I talked about the things that, not everything that you and I are talking about, but certainly about the Judeo-Christian values and how we needed to defend those values, or that maybe God would give up on America.
Well, Congressman, I appreciate that we've had you on, and if you've got more, we can keep you on. But one thing before you get off, if you get off, I want to, we're going to be having our Conservative Leadership Conference in March. It's the first weekend in March, the 4th and 5th. So I'm going to put you on the spot and invite you on the air, but I won't ask for your answer. But I'm going to be sending an invitation to your office for the 4th and 5th of March.
If you would go ahead and send it, I would love to be there with you and all the conservatives that believe the way that we do. And if you would tell Lisa, if she'll stay on the air, as we go off the air, I'd like to give her another name. I might could get the fellow that wrote the book, after you read it, extract, I might could get him to call in on your show.
I can do that.
Okay, so why don't we go ahead? Congressman, if you got any last words you want to say?
Well, I would like to say this. Please, God, continue to bless our men and women in uniform. Please, God, continue in your loving arms to hold the families who've given a child dying for freedom in Afghanistan and Iraq. And please, God, continue to bless America. We need your blessing so much. Thank you for letting me be on the show, Francis. Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Jones. And listeners, we're going to take a break and be back after the break with Tim Boyum from TWC News.
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. It was a scary flight for some Southwest passengers this morning. Shortly after takeoff, they told WREL they heard a loud thump followed by an awful smell that filled the cabin. The Tampa-bound flight was forced to return to RDU when a bird flew into one of its engines. Flight 3249 landed without incident. No injuries to passengers or crew were reported. RDU has recorded 468 incidents of aircraft, both private and passenger planes, hitting animals over the past 15 years. No one has been injured in any of the incidents. Two of the three men who allegedly carjacked a couple at gunpoint in the driveway of their Briar Creek home late last Thursday evening are behind bars. ABC 11 reports the latest to be arrested is only 16 years old. He and a 21-year-old, both from Raleigh, face charges of armed robbery and conspiracy. The third suspect has not been identified. While most of America slept, the U.S. Senate voted, passing a two-year budget. Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland has the details.
The spending bill averts a partial government shutdown in December. Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul opposed the deal, which also raises a debt ceiling.
That means we're going to let President Obama borrow an unlimited amount of money in his last year in office, and I think it's a serious mistake.
The legislation boosts spending on the Pentagon and domestic agencies. The White House has praised the agreement, saying it provides substantial relief from harmful spending cuts while protecting people who rely on Social Security and Medicare. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
Davidson County Sheriff's deputies are investigating the deaths of an elderly couple. The Associated Press reports the couple were found by their son shortly after 6 p.m. Thursday at their home in Thomasville. It's uncertain how long they'd been dead. Police say it appeared they'd been beaten. Their minivan was also missing. No arrests have been made. Wake Med is one of more than 450 hospitals across the nation that has agreed to settle millions of dollars in claims with the federal government over violations of Medicare regulations regarding implanted cardiac defibrillators. That's according to WREL. More than $250 million will be paid back to the government. Wake Med's share is $6.2 million. The State Bureau of Investigation needs your help in locating the man wanted in connection with the murder of a 25-year-old Siler City man. The 21-year-old suspect, also from Siler City, is charged with first-degree murder and robbery with a dangerous weapon. He has now been reported missing. Anyone with information on the case is asked to contact Siler City Police. The Board of Governors met for the first time today under new leadership. Last week, the board named Margaret Spellings as the new system president. Shortly after, Board Chairman John Fenebresque resigned. The interim chairman led the meeting today. Tomorrow is Halloween, but this isn't a trick. It's a treat, and no seance was involved. Elvis Presley died on August 16, 1977, but his legend lives on after a new album has been released. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers explains.
The new album's been highly anticipated and features Elvis with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. It's called If I Can Dream and contains 14 tracks recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London between 1956 and 1973. He even gets a little help on some of them.
Fever.
A virtual duet with jazz pop singer Michael Bublé on Fever, as well as guitarist Duane Eddy, who adds his sound to An American Trilogy and Bridge Over Troubled Water. Priscilla Presley is an executive producer of the album and calls the song choices diverse, saying Elvis would have liked that. Other songs include Burnin' Love, In the Ghetto, and of course, the title track. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of What Matters with guest host Francis DeLuca.
And welcome back, everybody, to What Matters with Chad Adams. And so this is Francis DeLuca, president of Civitas Institute, sitting in for Chad because Chad is laying in a hospital bed or on his way home or something. He has some throat problems, I think antibiotics, so got him out of the hospital, we think. He hasn't texted or anything, so we don't know. But, you know, he's probably going to be disappointed that no one's called in to wish him well or anything like that.
It'd be remarkable if Chad was able to be quiet for a long period of time.
And that voice you heard is our guest for this half hour or longer if we keep him, is Tim Boyum from TWC News. And we were talking about the irony of someone who loves to talk as much as Chad not being able to talk.
It must just kill him inside a little bit slowly all day long. But I hope he's better. I didn't realize it.
No, that's he went in last night. Last week when you talked to him, you know, he was complaining about not feeling good.
Yeah.
Well, as Lisa says, just like a man, he doesn't do anything.
Wait till the last minute.
And so he apparently got a bad infection and abscess maybe his throat, you know, so pretty bad apparently. I mean, bad enough that they actually, he put a picture up on Facebook of had an IV in him. And
jeez.
So.
Spooky Halloween for him.
Yeah. So he can go as a hospital patient for Halloween. Right. He could like walk around with the IV and the hospital gown.
Sympathy candy.
So, Tim, well, welcome. How's it been?
It's been pretty good. I've been out of town for a funeral a few days this week, so I missed some shenanigans going on. And most of the news has been national, though, it seems, except for, of course, the Sanctuary City bill. But
yeah, no, I was out of town also, and I just came back last night in time to watch the local live news of people chaining themselves in the street.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's the most fascinating thing about that was this. I've never seen the people fasten themselves together quite like they had.
That was the preparation that went into that was pretty detailed and extensive. That wasn't like, oh, let's go protest.
Yeah, if you didn't see, they were almost like in a semicircle sort of, and they had big PVC pipes between right. them, and they were latched in. What's interesting is our folks asked the fire department. They actually have training. This is a new way of protesting.
So they knew about it.
They knew about it, and they knew how to handle it. I mean, it took them a while, but they actually knew how to handle it.
Well, and did you see, in between each person, there was a wooden cradle for them to rest the plastic on?
Yeah.
That was cut out and assembled. I mean,
I'm telling you, it's a professional going on now.
Yeah, that's what I said. If you look, some of the people who sponsored it are out-of-state groups who are, you know, coming
yes,
in.
Yes, the state GOP was very quick to tweet out about how it was some of the same War Monday folks and the out-of-town union folks that are helping the protests.
And, you know, actually a pretty interesting thing. You put the little tubes on, and they can't just go and cut the chains because they have, and they can't. They got to be sure not to cut the people when they're cutting off the plastic and stuff.
I could see that. I was visioning them like behind the scenes, watching like YouTube videos. You know, because I don't do anything more without watching YouTube videos. But apparently, they actually have training. And what is also fascinating in some of the pictures was there's actually a dedicated fireman that was holding a video camera doing all this. It shows you the liability issues these days of when they're doing things like this. Police departments do it. I think the Capitol Police now have someone that is dedicated video camera all the protests. I mean, it's amazing where we're going now these days.
Well, because you know there's someone there with their phone filming it from the other side.
Catch one bad moment and it could be the end of you. And then we see all these issues with police departments too, separately, you know, across the country too. So, I mean, because you can't be too cautious these days. Everybody's got to videotape each other to have evidence just in case something goes awry.
I would not want to be a policeman. I wouldn't want to be actually a rescue worker probably in these days with stuff like that.
Yeah, it's wild times, but it was, the governor made a joke in an interview with our senior political reporter, Laura Benedi, about how protesters and how, you know, yeah, there's been 20 of them outside my mansion out of 9.6 million residents. And so, you know, he's fighting back on these issues. There were more than that last night.
I don't think there were. At first, it was the people chained them in some on the street. But then I think as the news went on, because
probably
the local news was live, of course, which is what this was time for. It's, you know, what I try and tell people, look, this is, they know what they're doing because they will get the live coverage. Now, like your show is taped ahead of time. So, you know, because you have people coming and going.
But we did go live from there last night. We do the first, the news block. We do that
right,
live.
That's on News 14. Mm-hmm. Or news, is that TWC News?
TWC, yeah. Tower Cable News. But Chad still calls it News 14 every week.
But that's live all the time. I mean, you can cut into things anytime
but
you want.
But even the show, we do the first block live, which we went to the scene live last night, although it was over with by then. But the main reason we needed to go live is because it's just the developments were happening, and you can't report on something that happened an hour ago. You know, at that time, I think all six arrests had been made, and they had dispersed, and the road was back open. And
what I found interesting about the now kind of getting into the political thing is that one of the protesters was actually an illegal.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, you know, how does this make sense? Of course, she will suffer no consequences, apparently, you know, as someone who thinks that you should. She's here illegally, and now she commits another crime. I would be scared to death to do that if I was in a country illegally.
Yeah, because, you know, we have that issue when we do these types of stories to find someone that's willing to go on camera. You know, they don't want their face shown. So, yeah, I guess they're willing to take that risk. Although it seems like it's only the violent offenders that they go after, you know, quickly.
Yeah, no, they would call this a nonviolent offense, even though you think about you disrupted traffic for a couple hours on right at now. If you had been leaving work and you could not get down that road, you'd be pretty...
Yeah. Well, imagine if they did that on like Dawson or McDowell or you know, something like
Blood's
that.
It's not quite as critical.
But they wanted to be in front of the executive mansion.
Where the governor wasn't.
Yeah.
But why did they want to be there?
Well, I think that maybe they thought he was going to be there and the governor knew and he moved his news conference over to, or his interviews over to the Capitol. I mean, who knows? There's so many maneuvers. You know, when the protests going on at the state Capitol, everybody's trying to find out ahead of time who's going to be doing what where. You see it from Capitol Police, lawmakers.
Social media. You can follow it on social media.
Yeah. Reverend Barber. They're trying to figure out each other. And sometimes it's almost coordinated between even Reverend Barber and the Capitol Police because everybody wants it to be safe regardless because they do have the right to assemble. You can argue where they have and how much in that, but you know everybody does want it to be. Well, I shouldn't say everybody always, but the goal is to allow it to be a peaceful protest.
Yeah, well, I mean, it for the people who are doing it, it loses something if it's not peaceful. In other words, if it turns violent or somebody gets hurt, people have a lot less tolerance for it. As long as it's peaceful, I think the general public is very tolerant of protest.
Yeah, in fact, I just watched Selma over the weekend. It was you know one of Martin Luther King's huge deals about why it was a nonviolent movement. So
right, because he understood that the violence does not get him any. It doesn't get him people among the people who aren't paying a lot of attention.
Yeah. So it's we'll see where it moves forward. I suspect it'll calm down and it'll be quiet, and this will be one of the issues. But this could be the sanctuary city issue could be a clear issue when you're running against someone that's an attorney general on the other side. So you know this issue could continue on to be an issue.
Yeah, because I think Cooper actually opposed the bill, and I think he wanted the governor to veto it.
And there were multiple. I mean, the bill is, and I'm not quite sure if he it's the sanctuary city part, or because you know it is multifaceted. There's a food stamp portion of it. I mean, a shock that there's convoluted legislation, but it is complicated. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I that's why we want to interview Roy Cooper, and you know we had a chance yesterday to interview the governor. But these are going to be issues. I could see this issue being one in 2016 because it's one of the clear differences. I mean, let's be honest, as everybody wants to paint McCrory as a right-wing conservative and Cooper as this crazy liberal, they're both fairly moderate traditional gubernatorial candidates in the state.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, having been in North Carolina my whole life, you know, McCrory could easily have been a Democrat 30 years ago, and Cooper could, just till the last couple years, I would say, he could have easily been a Republican not too long ago.
Yeah.
But he has shifted some of his positions. And McCrory, truthfully, really hasn't shifted his positions. He's gone along with some stuff more out of necessity. I mean, you know, he's vetoed a number of things and the legislature overrode him. But you're right. I mean, they could very easily be running on opposite sides.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating. This is broadening it out, but to see how this works. You know, if Deborah Ross ends up being the nominee on the Senate race, she is incredibly liberal and not unabashedly so. If Hillary Clinton runs, she's going to be pegged as super liberal. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that impacts Roy Cooper in the race, too. Because I do think those other races are going to get a lot of time. I mean, I do think, oddly enough, that's the premier race in North Carolina is going to be the governor's race, even on top of the presidential race, as much attention as it's going to get.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, over the last couple cycles, the state party has been very close to the national party in terms of, you know, but I could, if it ends up being Hillary Clinton, I think you will not see Roy Cooper getting very close to the national ticket. He will try and maintain his distance from it.
Yeah, and I think it depends on who the
if it's Roy Cooper, I should.
Yeah, if it is,
we shouldn't rule out Spalding.
Yeah, at this point, we definitely shouldn't. And the thing is I don't know if it's going to be that close in the state if Hillary Clinton is a candidate as well. I think whoever the Republican candidate, of course, it depends, but I don't think it's going to be 17,000 votes separate them or whatever. I think it's probably going to be a larger span than that in North Carolina.
And again, you're right, depending on who the candidate. Right now, I wouldn't want to be putting bets on who. Okay, so I had on Walter Jones, and so I asked him, and he kind of said, you know, he has committed to Rand Paul a long time ago. And until Rand Paul lets him off, he's sticking with that. So he kind of wouldn't really talk about the politics of present. You as an observer, who do you think is going to emerge from the Democratic or from the Republican thicket?
I mean, I still think at the end of the day, I mean, I would have said a month ago, Jeb Bush would be one of them, but and not necessarily North Carolina, but in general, I don't see how he's going to survive at this point unless something happens. I think Rubio is consistent enough, and I think he has enough supporters on both sides where I think he's going to be one of the final three probably. You know, Trump, I don't know what's going to happen in the next month and a half. Because you know what? The thing is, we're going to be busy with Thanksgiving pretty soon. Then we're busy with Christmas. And then it's January, and we're a few weeks away from Iowa. And he's still there, probably hovering about the same spot in the polls. So I think Trump's going to be there. So, you know, outside of those two, I don't know. Can Ted Cruz continue to elevate? I'm not sure about Ben Carson. You know, if he gets hammered on this economic stuff, which was supposed to be what Wednesday's debate was about, I think he's going to run into some problems moving forward. So I don't know. I mean, I could see Rubio coming out of it, but he's got some problems too, and he's a very young guy. He's only 44 years old. We were talking about this on the show today. You know, Paul Ryan is the youngest House Speaker since 1869. If he was House Speaker, Marco Rubio won, he'd be 45, I guess, when he was elected president. It'd be unbelievable to have the House Speaker and the President of the United States being 45 years old. And then if you think McConnell loses potentially his leadership position, maybe, there could be a younger person put in there too.
Yeah, you didn't, and you'd finally be seeing a true generational transfer. But, I always tell people that if I could pick who it would be, I've got to say I'm with Ted Cruz. I'm kind of a Cruz person. So I think what Cruz ends up doing is consolidating the real conservative vote. It looks like that's what he's doing right now. And so the question is, does the quote unquote establishment rally around Rubio, figuring that's the best hope for blunting Cruz?
And I think that's a legitimate point, and I think it's something that could very well happen. But I will say last spring, we had many people, including myself on the program, that thought Scott Walker was going to be a formidable person in this race and was probably going to be a final three. And he's sitting in the living room watching the Green Bay Packers this weekend. So, I mean, this Trump factor, I think, more than anything, has completely thrown this any logic in the air, and who knows how the cards are going to fall.
Well, Trump, I mean, when he came in, he basically sucked the oxygen out of the room, and that's what killed people like Cruz. And,
yeah.
Walker and Perry.
You know, and Bush now, it seems like.
Yeah, Bush, you got to say the exchange with I don't know if you saw that, the exchange with Rubio just really did not come off well Bush.
You know, and the problem with him right now, just from my amateur standpoint, is that whenever he's interviewed or he's on the stage, he looks super defensive. And I think that just really rubs off on voters the wrong way, regardless of whether he is being defensive or his policies are good or bad. I just think he looks really defensive right now. And that's not a good place to be when you're in a presidential race. But the interesting thing about Trump was, you know, at the GOP convention in North Carolina this summer, I was down there several days. We interviewed Cruz and Walker and Carson. We didn't even attempt to get Trump that day because he wasn't a candidate yet. Nobody was taking him serious. I think the NNO, Colin Campbell, interviewed him on a whim because they grabbed him and pulled him into a room. And he was the only person that even stopped to interview him. I mean, it's just amazing where a few months will go in this race.
Well, and, you know, I think he's got his core support and probably will keep it for a while. And what'll be interesting is when we get to me, New Hampshire, Iowa, New Hampshire, and there's a, you know, some people say that as long as you got gas money, you can compete in Iowa and New Hampshire. And so I think we're going to see a number of the candidates keep going at least through that. And do we get a surprise out of that? I mean, I'm kind of saying this. I'm asking, do we get a surprise with one of the also-rans popping up in one of those two states?
I mean, it's possible, right? I mean, look at the last two winners in Iowa, if I'm not mistaken. Rick Santorum, sort of after the fact, but still. And Mike Huckabee in 2008. And Santorum, most people don't remember, but he won 11 states and was the runner-up in the Republican race. So I think it's perfectly possible that that happens. I don't know who it is, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see if a Rubio could have an impact there. But, you know, Kasich's not too far away. Could he be a surprise in the Midwest? He may not be conservative enough, but it'd be interesting.
Because the religious voters have a lot of impact in Iowa, and Kasich has done some things to kind of turn religious voters off. And so New Hampshire is more the Kasich. Yeah. I think that's where he's putting his chips.
But I don't know who it would be. I mean, could it be Huckabee again? I think his time has sort of passed, but you never know.
Yeah, has it passed, but does he still have enough cachet to do well in the Iowa caucus?
Watch if Carson keeps harping on religion and pushing that, I think he's someone that could maybe win. Now, that wouldn't necessarily be a surprise at this point. I mean, he's leading in at least one poll there, but, you know, I mean, I think Carson has to win.
But if he wins Iowa or, you know, comes out of there winning Iowa, does that boost him going forward from that?
And then for some reason, Trump falters into third or fourth. Does that start a downfall for Donald Trump in the future? I mean, it's going to be unbelievable to watch. And anybody that thinks they know are out of their minds at this point, because we're in unprecedented territory.
Yeah, I would, you know, I've said I wouldn't want to put money on anybody, but I wouldn't want to vote against anybody, put money against anybody either.
Well, even on the Democratic side, I mean, the conventional wisdom is that Hillary Clinton's going to win, but we don't know what may or may not come out on any of these various issues that she's facing. So it could look like she's winning 76% of the Democratic primary, and then on February 3rd, some investigation drops about her. So I there's so much uncertainty. It's fun for us, but it's wild.
Well, and does, you know, Sanders is probably, I mean, he's got a legitimate shot, even if he's not up in the polls, of winning either or both of New Hampshire and Iowa.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, his campaign has gotten better. He's raising money. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And even if he doesn't win Iowa, I mean, a state like New Hampshire is big for him now. For some reason, he didn't win either one of those and lost New Hampshire, it'd probably be the end for.
Yeah, I don't think, reason. If he doesn't like hold her, you know, almost to a tie in one or both of them, if not winning it, then I don't see how he goes on, because I don't think he's going to do very well in South Carolina.
No. South Carolina will be bad. And he's a little bit like Trump. You know, he has that sort of 25% folks that are going to support him no matter what he does and what he says. The question is, can he rise above that? And I think that's the question for Trump as well. But the thing benefiting Trump is there's like 74 candidates below that will split the rest. And so 25% might be just enough to win those early states.
Well, that's what I think Sanders' path, if there was one, was somebody else getting in the race who's a credible alternative.
A Joe Biden, perhaps.
A Joe Biden. Or you wonder, there's still been a couple names of people who are kind of hovering out there that might jump in, but Al Gore is always mentioned. John Kerry for a while, but I think John Kerry is having too much fun selling out the U.S. around the world.
Yeah, it's hard to lose that race again, too, when you've moved on like he has. Interestingly enough, bring it back to North Carolina, is the Board of Governors met today, and Tom Ross was asked again about the U.S. Senate. He sort of walked away and said he had to get to Winston-Salem. And then there was then some conservative writer wrote something about he was here and he might be in. So, boy, that would be remarkable if he jumped in for whatever reason. I don't have anybody telling me that, but boy, that would really throw things for a loop.
It would not. I mean, I think he would be a natural because he would, I think, to the Democratic establishment, to the Hunt machine, Tom Ross is their kind of candidate. That would reinforce the Roy Cooper race. I think it would be a natural thing that you'd have two very similar people at the top of the ticket for Democrats.
Yeah, and he has obviously the connections to raise money. It's questionable whether at this late in the game with Deborah Ross out raising money every single day among some of the big groups. And I'm not quite sure what kind of political candidate he would be. You know, can he debate Richard Burr on ISIS? You know, I don't know. But
he doesn't have to debate Richard Burr on ISIS. He just has to debate Deborah Ross on ISIS.
Well, that's true. First, before that,
yeah.
But if you're looking at that from a Democratic perspective, which yes, you're right, he'd have to do that beforehand. You know, I don't know. I've always thought that he's a very good candidate on paper. I'm not sure if he is in person. And that's not a negative comment toward him. Some, you know, he's an academic. He's been running an institution. It's a lot different than being a politician.
But remember where he was before that. He was a candidate. He's been an elected judge.
True.
And he's run.
That's true.
He came up through politics. And, you know, being a judge, being a lawyer, he probably is fairly good on his feet and speaking.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I mean, I think, I just wonder if he's going to run into like a Biden issue if something doesn't come out soon. It's just getting really late. I mean, we saw for that Treasurer's race, there was a couple people that said they were interested and didn't realize that they were independents and already passed the deadline to run for Treasurer. And those were pretty well-known people, established folks.
I found that very humorous about,
So, it may be just too late, but you never know. If there's enough money, I think you can do it. But you got to have money in the U.S. Senate race.
Yeah, I think, we talked about that deadline for switching parties for long ago, and obviously not everybody was paying attention to that.
Yeah, it just shows some of the smartest people in this state, some of this stuff's hard to follow what we do.
Which came up today, we were actually talking about something, and I don't know the answer to this, is in Wake County, Susan Evans, who's on the Wake County School Board, announced she's going to run for state senate. Well, the Wake County School Board elections are the same time as the state. She'll have to run for re-election, so that means she can't. But then we go, okay, well, are those people going to have to file in December? Because their election is next fall. And so I asked that question. I don't have the answer. So I was looking today to try and figure, and I still don't have the answer. So I'm not quite sure. The Wake County School Board elections are next fall, of them.
I don't know. Part of me thinks like it might be next summer.
No, well, unless they're in, I thought they were going to coincide now with the even year elections.
But I wonder if they have a separate filing deadline. I have to go back and look at that legislation.
Yes, that's what I was looking for, and I couldn't quite find an answer. It might be in the bill that they have a different filing deadline.
You know, what's interesting about that, though, is I had someone in today that was telling me off camera that there is just a massive amount of chaos, confusion, and uncertainty about who's going to run for what, who wants to run for what, can we do it? And this change in the primary date has created it. And it's fascinating to watch. And I think you're going to see some people decide, we won't know, but some people that may have run against someone that's not going to, and they're just going to wait until 2018 or 2020, I think, because it's too much too fast for a lot of them.
And it's the holiday season.
It's the holiday season, and money rules the day. And now that you have if there's going to be a primary opponent, I mean, if you're not well known, good luck getting attention when you got a presidential race, a gubernatorial race, and a Senate race in the state. And I mean, I know even the gubernatorial candidates, I don't think you're going to see much in ads from them until after March 15th. If they're saving that space, boy, I don't know how any other candidates are going to do it.
Do you have a few minutes? Can you stay?
Yeah, I can stay.
Okay. We're going to, so Lisa is shaking her head that you can stay.
Say yes. I passed.
Yeah. You've been given permission.
Always have to ask.
Of course.
Yes. So, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back after the break with Tim Boyum. talk some more politics and government.
Freedom Action Network News, I'm Lisa Price. It was a scary flight for some Southwest passengers this morning. Shortly after takeoff, they told WREL they heard a loud thump followed by an awful smell that filled the cabin. The Tampa-bound flight was forced to return to RDU when a bird flew into one of its engines. Flight 3249 landed without incident. No injuries to passengers or crew were reported. RDU has recorded 468 incidents of aircraft, both private and passenger planes, hitting animals over the past 15 years. No one has been injured in any of the incidents. Two of the three men who allegedly carjacked a couple at gunpoint in the driveway of their Briar Creek home late last Thursday evening are behind bars. ABC 11 reports the latest to be arrested is only 16 years old. He and a 21-year-old, both from Raleigh, face charges of armed robbery and conspiracy. The third suspect has not been identified. While most of America slept, the U.S. Senate voted, passing a two-year budget. Fox News Radio's Rachel Sutherland has the details.
The spending bill averts a partial government shutdown in December. Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul opposed the deal, which also raises the debt ceiling.
That means we're going to let President Obama borrow an unlimited amount of money in his last year in office, and I think it's a serious mistake.
The legislation boosts spending on the Pentagon and domestic agencies. The White House has praised the agreement, saying it provides substantial relief from harmful spending cuts while protecting people who rely on Social Security and Medicare. In Washington, Rachel Sutherland, Fox News Radio.
Davidson County Sheriff's deputies are investigating the deaths of an elderly couple. The Associated Press reports the couple were found by their son shortly after 6 p.m. Thursday at their home in Thomasville. It's uncertain how long they'd been dead. Police say it appeared they'd been beaten. Their minivan was also missing. No arrests have been made. Wake Med is one of more than 450 hospitals across the nation that has agreed to settle millions of dollars in claims with the federal government over violations of Medicare regulations regarding implanted cardiac defibrillators. That's according to WREL. More than $250 million will be paid back to the government. Wake Med's share is $6.2 million. The State Bureau of Investigation needs your help in locating the man wanted in connection with the murder of a 25-year-old Siler City man. The 21-year-old suspect, also from Siler City, is charged with first-degree murder and robbery with a dangerous weapon. He has now been reported missing. Anyone with information on the case is asked to contact Siler City Police. The Board of Governors met for the first time today under new leadership. Last week, the board named Margaret Spellings as the new system president. Shortly after, Board Chairman John Fennebresk resigned. The interim chairman led the meeting today. Tomorrow is Halloween, but this isn't a trick. It's a treat, and no seance was involved. Elvis Presley died on August 16, 1977, but his legend lives on after a new album has been released. Fox News Radio's Tanya J. Powers explains.
The new album's been highly anticipated and features Elvis with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. It's called If I Can Dream and contains 14 tracks recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London between 1956 and 1973. He even gets a little help on some of them. Fever. A virtual duet with jazz pop singer Michael Bublé on Fever, as well as guitarist Duane Eddy, who adds his sound to An American Trilogy and Bridge Over Troubled Water. Priscilla Presley is an executive producer of the album and calls the song choices diverse, saying Elvis would have liked that. Other songs include Burnin' Love, In the Ghetto, and of course, the title track. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News Radio.
And now you're up to date. Stay informed with Freedom Action Network News. I'm Lisa Price. Now back to more of what matters with guest host Francis DeLuca.
And welcome back to What Matters with Chad Adams. This is Francis DeLuca, president of Civitas Institute, sitting in for Chad while Chad is laying down on the job.
Literally
laying down with an IV in his arm, getting some antibiotics and well-deserved rest. Hopefully he'll be back sometime in the future. But that's okay. I came in during the...
I like Tim's laugh on that. That's good.
I came in during the news. And I had to say that last news piece, I thought I was listening to an ad for some musical or something. It took me... I didn't realize that was a news
Elvis.
Report. Okay, it's Elvis. That's right.
He's today, releasing a new album.
Well, it's his... Now, what is today? There's some celebration... No, that's right. August.
August 16th, 1977.
That's it.
Wow. That was right off the top of the head.
That's because it said it in the story.
Ah.
It was also the day after my mom died. Sorry, my mom's birthday. And I was at camp. I remember it well.
I don't.
You weren't born. Were you even born?
Pretty young.
I'm a 76er, so...
That's when you were born?
He was one.
Oh, God. That's when I graduated high school.
Unfortunately, it's also the last time my Minnesota Vikings won a Super Bowl, but we won't talk about that. So.
I was 11.
And that, again, is Tim Boyum. He's back with
that strange voice you're hearing.
That strange voice is Tim Boyum from TWC News. He's the senior political...
That's actually Loretta's title.
She's
now.
A senior political reporter.
I'm just Capital Tonight host.
That's it? You don't have some like senior political editor? Or...
No. That all got ruined by Brian Williams, so I'm just kidding.
Brian's back.
He is back. He's on MSNBC.
MSNBC. And,
oh, you know, that's a real station?
I might see him next
soon
week.
Soon to be joined by John Harwood.
God. We're going to Winthrop next next Friday, a week from tonight, we'll be doing the show live. The Democratic Forum is going on.
They won't call it a debate.
Well, no, they're not. They're actually, it's basically Rachel Maddow is going to sit up there and interview them one by one. In long form, it's a really different. I don't know how it's going to work, but
some people would say this is better because you get to hear more of the candidate. But you know, the question is, and did you catch any of the debate? I know you were out of town.
I was actually on a flight. I watched the one same airline. The one flight I got to see the quote unquote undercard debate, and then the second flight there was no Wi-Fi. Same airline, so I got to experience just seeing the headlines and the spin, which was sort of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
To go back afterwards, but I think I heard enough through the headlines and the spin.
You got the gist of it.
It was pretty unanimous.
So what do you, okay, being a member of the powerful media.
And a moderator of many debates.
And what do you think about the criticisms? And I got to say, I saw a very little bit of it because I was at a dinner that night, so I didn't get to watch TV, but I saw a lot of the, immediately afterwards, they were showing extended clips.
I'm a little bit of a purist when it comes to this. First of all, the number one rule as a moderator is don't become the story. I always that people always ask me what do you hope this debate turns out to be? And my number one thing I always say, if I'm not in the newspaper the next day, things have gone pretty well. So they have failed on all accounts when it comes to that. And the only reason I say that is because it really seems unanimous. I mean, I've not heard anybody defend
them.
Other
news outlets are attacking them.
The only people to defend them were themselves in like a 12-worded statement that they keep referring back to. So I'm a little bit of a purist. I've had a problem with every debate so far in some ways. You know, the Fox News one, they basically said, here's why people think you stink. Why should they vote for you? The CNN one... Unabashedly, Jake Tapper said, I'm going to pit them up against each other. And so they said, this guy said you stink. Tell him why directly you don't stink. And then this one, they basically just said, you know, you're a clown. So why should people vote for you? So I like the fact of asking them serious, legitimate questions in a tough manner. But it has to be policy. And I understand that this is about ratings. And that this personality stuff is what's really doing it. But our role is to find out why voters should want to vote for these people. And I understand that this has turned into a personality contest, but we're not E! Entertainment. We are not, Entertainment Tonight and TMZ. So I like the structured debate. I'm very rigid and very hard on people to an extent. I mean, when I did the U.S. Senate Republican debate last spring, the very first question, Mark Harris went 3 seconds over and I cut him off and ended, and that was it. And we moved forward and it set the tone. So this Wednesday when they came out and said, well, what's your weakness? And they went and it just derailed from the instant that started. And that's why we're seeing these issues of not having equal time for the candidates. At the same token, I think it has to be some freedom of movement to allow people to respond to each other, particularly when it is a targeted attack. If it's on substance, I think that's of great value. I had moderated some Charlotte debates a few weeks ago, the Republican candidates, and they started to go at each other. and they wanted to respond to each other. And I said, I'm going to open this up on this topic for 2 more minutes, and you are going to be allowed to question and answer back and forth. And they were good with it, and it was a great exchange. And I stopped it when it was clearly not moving in a positive direction and moved on to the next question. Now, moderating a presidential debate is way different than moderating a Charlotte debate. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm an expert and I know what I'm talking about and I should be doing this. But to me, that's kind of where I sit on this issue.
Well, surprisingly, I'm not a big fan of the national media. Being, you know, but I have to say, when you look at some of the questions that Harwood and some of the others asked of the Republicans, and this has been even the Fox people, you go, would you have asked any of the Democrat candidates those same questions? And the answer is no. I mean, they did not ask, like Harwood, would he ask Hillary Clinton, well, Hillary, you know, over 50% of the American people think you're a liar. And why should they not think you're a liar? That would be the equivalent question of what calling Trump a cartoon character.
Yeah, and you're right on that. And I'm actually fascinated for this forum to see Rachel Maddow because she is clearly very liberal and whatnot. But she's also very tough with guests. She's a brilliant woman. And so I'm curious to see how she handles it. And I think this is not going to be as highly publicized because A, Donald Trump's not in it. B, it's oddly on a Friday night. And C, this race is not as exciting as everybody else.
And it's on MSNBC.
It's on MSNBC. But I am fascinated to see how she handles that because and she's a substantive person. I mean, you can disagree with her, but she takes on a lot of very not easy TV type of discussions. So I'm kind of fascinated by it. But, you know, it's just they have turned into reality TV shows. And I think it's very unfortunate. You know, if I was a random person, I know that CNBC is a economic, you know,
that's
show.
I'm a big watcher of CNBC. So
I would expect almost in the weeds type questions about markets and job creation and the national deficit. I mean, how it's so weird, even in the Republican race, we're hardly ever talking about the national debt. And I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, but I was at the Republican National Convention in 2012 in Tampa, Florida, and there was on, you know, where they do the scoreboard across the where everyone sits in that, the stream, they had a clock that was the national debt that kept ticking up and up and up. I mean, that was such a huge deal, and it's like it's evaporated as an issue.
Well, that's because the media isn't, you know, so far the media is not interested in that. And I don't know if any of the candidates are talking about it. I know, you know, you hear individual politicians all the time
talking
about it.
Yeah, I mean, Rand Paul talks about it quite a bit. In fact, I think he was using that as a reason he was so frustrated about the CNBC debate was he wanted to talk about, you know, the national debt issues. It's coming up a little bit more as we talk about some of this military spending and some of these tax plans that are coming out by Donald Trump and Jeb Bush about how it's going to increase the national debt. But I think it's the candidates' faults, too, though, because they're not packaging it, their message, in a way that's understandable. I mean, we sit here and talk about this, and we're intelligent enough, but we still have to research about it because it is very complicated. You know, you start talking about supply-side economics, and your average people are, they're done. They're done. They've gone to, you know, go get a beer, or go to bed, or whatever.
Sad.
You know,
that's
but
sad.
It is.
But I agree. You said something important. You know, the fact that it was on CNBC, they said it was going to be economic issues, you know, in budget and stuff like that. How many people tuned into that thinking they were going to hear a substantive discussion? And, you know, did they ask any questions about the Fed? A perfect place to ask.
Yeah.
You know, because the president appoints the head of the Fed. And, you know, so wouldn't that have been they talk about the Fed every day on CNBC.
There's a great discussion about whether we should be raising interest rates or not. We have that upcoming. In fact, that meeting was this week where they decided not to, I believe. And there's another one in December. I mean, these are huge issues. You know, the housing market's, it's one of the biggest indicators on in the economy.
How do we treat Fannie and Freddie?
And, yeah, when you ask those type of questions, it's like I said, I actually think Ben Carson was lucky because when he was asked on this stuff really hard, it was clear it's not his forte. I'm not saying he couldn't be president.
No, but
like
you're
him.
Right. It's not his.
It's not his forte. And the voters need to know that kind of stuff, even if it's in the stories the next day. And it's really troubling, I think. But I'm also nervous about when I hear stories about the candidates meeting Sunday on their own, talking about how they're going to put a list of demands in, because I can't stand it when the candidates try to control how debates are run. And I understand people can't stand how the media tries to control it either. And these need to be somewhat symbiotic relationships, but candidates can't control it because then, you know, they're getting away with not doing what they don't want to do, which is easy ways to win and look bad.
Here's what I would say. And the Democrats actually, to their credit, have been better at managing this, is that the debates are supposed to, because these are Republican debates, should be putting the Republicans in a good light. And I think what the candidates see is, we don't come out of this looking real good when we get questions like that. We either look like we don't answer the question, or we look, you know, if we answer the questions, go, when did you stop, you know, kicking
your
dog?
Although I would argue that this week they may look better because they all got almost on stage together, started hammering the mainstream media. In the Republican world, there's nothing better than hammering the mainstream media. So
I said that months ago. I said, whoever, I think we may have talked to you about
probably,
it.
Probably, yeah.
You know, because there was somebody who, and I said, whichever candidate comes out and starts beating up on the media is probably going to catch fire. Of course, then Trump just blew everything out of the water.
This is just
but
a
he
prediction.
He pushed back early.
He did. He did, and he won. Here's my prediction. I don't know if this will ever happen, but last weekend there was an NFL game that was streamed nationally for the first time. It wasn't on TV, it was streamed, and there were 16.9 million viewers.
On Yahoo.
Mm-hmm, on Yahoo. What's to stop the Republican Party from conducting their own debates and streaming it on their website or a national review website or someone else's? And just bypassing the media altogether. I think there's a possibility, or at least as experiment, they will make that one out of the four debates moving forward. And if that happens, then we really won't see it. It's just a guess, but I think it's a possibility.
Well, I mean, they could potentially say, we're going to stream this if there's a network that wants to carry it.
Yeah.
They can carry it at no cost. So you would probably have a number of...
Which will put the networks in an amazing position because, you know, the networks for this is a whole marketing and money-making thing. And they've made the mistake of pointing out on numerous occasions how much money they're making off of this, which just irritates... I mean, you hear Donald Trump, I donate the money, I'm making money off of it. But they also want their premier anchors,
yeah,
you know, FaceTime to make them look legit and to bring in new viewers for their show and stuff. And so I think, you know... I don't know. I think everybody in this case, the party, the candidates, and the media are not doing any favors to themselves right now. But we'll see.
Well, in the tragedy of it is, you know, is it furthers the breakdown of whatever commonality we have as a people. I mean, the one thing I will say, and I'm not a big fan of the big media or press or anything, is that that is a bad thing when there's no common shared experience in terms of anything, in terms of news, in terms of entertainment, in terms of whatever it might be.
Yeah, well, there's no such thing. I shouldn't say no such thing because I think we do a pretty good job about it. But there's no such thing as a healthy debate without people taking it personal. That comes from a media debate, a candidate debate, or just a conversation on Blunt Street. You know, I just, that's a problem for this country. And it's continuing that divide. Now we have niche media, so people that like politics are only watching those. And so then we don't have the general media and people aren't paying attention. We're really becoming a segmented society, and the media is just at the forefront of that, really. But I don't know. You're right. I mean, it's hard, and we come together magically when there's a 9/11 moment or something, you know. But it's short lived, and then we're back at bickering each other, and you know, Paul Ryan's gonna have a fun time of trying to keep his own party together. We'll see how that happens. Let alone Democrats and Republicans. And by the way, we have the fastest growing base of voters, which are unaffiliated.
Well, do you need to go stay for the final segment?
I can stay.
Okay, we're going to keep going. We're not going to take a break. Let's just keep going because, you know, you talked about this fragmenting everything. I was listening to this story a couple days ago about delivery. And there's now a whole segment of the market that has boxes. I forget exactly what it's called, but it's called box. And you can get, you know, there are boxes to get Japanese candy delivered monthly to your house. And apparently, there's like literally
niche food. I read this too, I think.
Yeah. They have a name. There's a name for it. But it's like all these different, and they're not all one company. These were all set, and there's literally hundreds of these companies have sprung up that you as a consumer can get whatever it is you want monthly to your house.
I think it was Clark. I was listening to Clark Howard.
That's who I was talking about. Clark Howard. That's so you were listening to the same thing. And I
unabashedly love Clark Howard.
Yeah, no, I mean, but
I do too.
I never heard of. I it's funny because I actually heard of these. There's I'd seen one for advertisement or it's things that delivers like cosmetics. There's a woman
Birch Box.
That's it. Birchbox. I knew about Birchbox because I have two daughters and
it
a wife.
It is such a fabulous service.
And
Birchbox sounds like a tree to me.
No, it delivers wonderful samples of all these beauty supplies that you are interested in so that you can sample them and you are not assaulted in the store. And it comes to your home.
And you subscribe to that. And you get it automatically every
$10
month.
$10 a month.
And they say there are like literally hundreds and hundreds of these now. But you think about what we were just talking about segmenting the population mm-hmm. and niche marketing and stuff. How much more niche can you get than these actually show up at your door and you don't have to interact with people?
And if Amazon delivers it in the future, it could be a drone that pops
I
up right on your board.
I stopped my DVR to actually look at the commercial.
Now, see, that's a miracle in this day and age.
I did.
Who stops their DVR to...
I went, ooh.
Mine's usually going by so fast, I don't even know what the commercial
was.
Well,
then I said, Cortana, remind me, birchbox.com.
See?
Yeah.
See, and that was what Clark Howard was talking about.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that thing about, he goes, he had no idea there was that much interest in Japanese candy. But yet, he said there were dozens of companies that specialize in delivering Japanese candy to your door. And I thought, well, that's pretty simple. There's a lot of Japanese or people who've been to the Orient living here now.
Yeah,
so
or they might have traveled and found something I thought was really neat. I mean, right. It's the brilliance of the internet, right? I mean, you see something you like, and before it would take, you'd have to call 95 people to figure out what the heck it is. Now you just do one little Google search, and 2 minutes later, you have it.
And every month, you get a different selection.
Yeah, I know. When I used to go to dance clubs when I was 21, you know, a popular song, believe it or not, I did.
You're admitting this.
I know, sadly.
Well, let's see.
I can hear the laughter.
So that would have been about the late 90s.
I'm actually proud. Yeah. I'm proud of you for dancing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I didn't say dance. I said I went to dance
clubs. Because you know who else went to dance clubs?
Women. Yeah. And that meant he danced. Yeah. Okay, Francis.
More like just sort of a head bobbing, but that's all right.
That's fine.
But there used to be, a song would come on and I would think, this is the greatest song. I got to find this out. And I would drive around to
research it.
You know what song this is? I have no idea. I'd drive to Target to see if they had it. And now I just do a Google search.
Actually, you hold up your phone.
Yeah. 10 seconds. And then I go and I buy it and it's instantly on my phone. I mean, it's just amazing how the world has changed. It's scary and exciting all at once. Because for me, like I watched on 60 Minutes one piece about an Amazon, I think it was an Amazon warehouse. And the whole warehouse was a grid and it was all robots moving things around and packaging, which it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And scary.
Scary. You know, people talk about illegal immigration and jobs. Holy smokes, the robots are going to be way worse.
I mean, was thinking the same thing.
So who's going to make money? The people that owns these companies and then very low wage jobs.
Okay, Francis and Tim. Chad laughed at me because I said, okay, I don't want them for self-driving cars because you know what? Somebody's going to hack in and they're going to drive my car into a train track and they're not going to let me out, just like what happened on Extant. Okay?
That could be a terrorism tactic.
Well, you know where the robot thing ends up. Terminator.
Well, hey, and
I
was just reading that they have allowing for software ability for that you can now actually hack in legally to a computer software and through the software onto your car.
So if you ever want to read something that's fascinating economically that's actually fairly understandable, it's this discussion, right? Because there's this argument going on right now whether there will be unbelievably high skilled positions of IT and upper management. And then there's going to be incredibly low wage, which are going to be, you know, mechanics fixing these machinery and that and other, you know, low wage jobs.
Do you know what car mechanics make now?
Well, I know.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, that might be a highly skilled position, though, anyway.
That's what it is.
But the others will be incredibly low. It'll be like all service jobs. I'm not knocking service jobs, but, you know, we're talking economics. So the wage gap will be enormous. But there's others that say we've gone through the Industrial Revolution, we've gone through many other things, and that it will not be this inevitable torture of rich and poor like it is. And so it's a fascinating discussion if you want to Google it.
Yeah, what's interesting, you know, one of the things people tend to forget in the discussion of what you just brought up is that what these things do is they allow the production of more wealth because – and to the extent that, you know, some people are really rich and some people really poor, would I rather be really poor today or really poor 100 years ago?
Probably today.
Right. So it's all a relative thing. That's what I try to tell people. Think about, you know, we've got the Biltmore house. And you think about how those people lived back at the turn of the last century. And they may have lived in the biggest house in the U.S. and the wealthy with servants and everything. But their you know, they were susceptible to the same germs that the poorest person on earth was susceptible to.
Yeah.
It would kill them just as quickly. Today, the poorest person on earth can be saved from that, what they couldn't cure. But so you, I try to explain the whole thing about disparity in income.
Yeah. Although the question is that, you know, I mean, life or death is obviously different, but it'll be interesting to see if that does occur, the ability to go from one class to another, because it won't be stepping stones. It'll be one giant leap.
Well,
could be, I should say.
Could be. Yeah. That is interesting. You know, we always have a middle class.
Yeah.
That's really what you're talking about.
It's a magical presidential term of the disappearing middle class. You know, yeah. I mean, we hear it from Republicans and Democrats, you know. And I mean, the hardest part about covering this stuff now is economists don't agree on this. And economists are partisan in a lot of ways. Economists are paid to be one way or the other. So it's challenging. And, you know, I think technology in the economy and the world are moving much faster than they did in the past as well. So I think the uncertainty is very scary to people and the understanding of it compared to, you know, how long the Industrial Revolution took and you know, post-World War II, et cetera, et cetera.
I got to, because what you just said triggered something. I was at a conference this week is where I was. And one of the things that came up, and I've never heard anybody say this, and they probably have, but they talked about the American dream. And they said, you know, just as an answer to your question, there is no other nation that has a dream. You never hear about the Italian dream, the English dream, you know. So the question is, you know, we've always kind of had this aspirational thing. Whatever the dream is, it's never quite defined, but everybody kind of has bought into it. You know, will that continue in the future is really what you're talking about. You're not talking about middle class. You're not talking about social mobility and everything. You're talking about this ideal that everybody buys into the American dream.
Yeah. And the world has changed, right? Like I always have to tell myself this, like it's a tendency to long for the way that you remember things, but the kids now are going to grow up only having had handheld devices. So they, you know, like I can't understand why my nephew wouldn't want to watch an 80-inch TV screen to watch the game instead of watching it in front of his face on a, you know, 4-inch
phone. You're so happy to have that 80-inch.
I know, I'm loving it. I'm like, what is wrong with these people? And I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting old. And, you know, but the truth is that's the thing. We all have different frames of mind and they will have grown up in such a different world, probably a much more different world than a couple generations have gone through, but we're not that far removed from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, which was an insanely different generation. So the generational differences, and because people are living longer, don't forget, we have four generations in the workforce right now, which changes everything when you're trying to get those people to work together into common goals. And so the challenges are different, I think, because of, you know, can anytime I'm getting my master's, I have all sorts of random weird things.
What are you getting a master's in, okay? As we,
I'm getting it in a new media, marketing, and public relations.
You want to understand what all these millennials are talking about.
I'm not getting it. I'm not doing it to get another job. I mean, I am getting it to broaden my skill base because you never know in the world. But it also helps me with our show and producing that marketing. But it's just fascinating to watch. If you start reading about something, Google something called the Internet of Things, and it's the most fascinating you'll ever read. I mean, how it's going to impact farming.
That's we're already there when you see the advertisements for refrigerators that have computers in them, and that you are connected to other things to remind you that you need milk.
Yeah.
That's a basic Internet of Things.
Yeah, and they've even changed little things like you could put it under there and you just punch a quarter cup and a quarter cup of water automatically goes out. So you don't even need a measuring cup because it just goes in there. I mean, and that's something very simple. But like with the farming, I mean, it's going to be complicated grids and it'll water based on testing of the soil automatically knowing what it needs. And so the efficiency of water, electricity, and cost.
Yeah. And that's a lot of the times, you know, and we talk about climate change and everything like that, you know, but I am a believer that technology and the human ingenuity will solve all, if those are real problems, we'll solve them. We don't have to worry about reducing our standard of living today to solve them. When you look at, you know, things like what you just talked about with instant testing of the soil to see if it needs water. And if it does, we'll just water that one place.
Yeah. The challenging thing now is that, you know, we used to solve one or two problems at a time and there's just so many now because we're catching up to the technology because the technology is so much faster than our use of it. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but man, it's really fascinating. It's been eye opening to see it all.
Well, Tim, Thank you for coming again.
Sorry to talk much politics.
Well, no, this was good. I hope people enjoyed the conversation. Tim Boyum from TWC News, Capital Tonight, every night at 7 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
So watch it. And I just learned today that it is supposedly on demand for those of you out
yes,
there.
Yes, and online.
Online. That I knew, but I didn't know I could get 10 free views a month, but... You've been listening to What Matters with Chad Adams. This is Francis DeLuca. I hope everybody has a good weekend. And I hope, Chad, if you're listening, Chad, I hope you feel better. Rest your throat because we'll need you. We'll take care of the next week. So get better. And Lisa Price has been producing. And see you next week.